Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett, the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Annette, Val, and The Green Knight. And I've been reliably informed that these are designations. Hi, David. How are you?
Doing okay, Jill. How are you doing this week?
Won't complain.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, I got plenty to say, so I'll get started then. Our theme this week, as it sometimes is that we have absolutely no theme. These three movies are completely different from one another. But they're all out right now, and they're all fairly major releases, and I think they're all worthy of a little bit of commentary. So the first one I'd like to talk about is called Annette, and it is a musical. And it is a very unconventional musical in all kinds of ways. And it is made by the French filmmaker Léos Carax. It's the first movie that he's directed, which he didn't also write. And it has a lot of music in it. It is very, very much a musical. And the music is written by and performed by the duo called Sparks. So if you're a Sparks aficionado, there's an enormous amount of this movie that will please you. I'm not sure if the movie as a whole is going to please everybody because it's very unconventional, but it's a really interesting piece of work. So first of all, a little bit about the person who made it, Léos Carax, a very, very offbeat filmmaker in every way. And he first emerged as a pretty major force back in the middle of the 80s with a couple of movies, one called Boy Meets Girl, another one called Mauvais Sang or Bad Blood, a very controversial movie called The Lovers on the Bridge, and so forth. And these movies established him as an enormously complicated and interesting and talented filmmaker, but also you could never be quite sure what he was going to do next, and sometimes his stuff really succeeded and sometimes it really did not succeed. He had something of a minor hit roughly 10 years ago with a movie called Holy Motors, and since then he has not made a movie, but now he has come out with Annette. And so that's just a little bit about him, and the main point I want to make is that he's very very unpredictable and controversial even among people who really pay close attention to art film and to French film. He always seems to be trying to entertain with his movies, even though his movies, again, are very eccentric in all kinds of ways. So with Annette, he has made one of his more eccentric movies, probably of all time. It's not eccentric in its casting, because it has a couple of just really popular stars. Adam Driver plays the main role, who is a comedian named Henry McHenry, and Marion Cotillard, a phenomenally gifted French star, plays Anne. Now, the thing is that Henry, one of the main characters, is a comedian and a very unfunny comedian. He appears to be very popular. We see him performing before large crowds, but they're very often not laughing and yelling out things like not funny, and he's agreeing with them. That's not funny. So that's the kind of comedian he is. Anne, on the other hand, is a very high art talent. She is an opera singer and apparently a very successful opera singer. The movie kind of makes a joke out of what she does for a living is to die and die and die, as happens in so many operas, and then bow and bow and bow because she's very popular and people love her singing. Anyway, they are a couple and they get married and the plot proceeds from there. Their marriage is not a happy one, partly because she becomes more and more successful. He becomes less and less successful. Their styles of life are very different. And then they have a baby. And again, this is a Léos Carax movie. So the baby turns out to be, it appears to be a doll, a very funny looking doll that moves and walks and talks and eventually sings and does things like that. But it's a doll. So, okay, this is a very strange and interesting movie. Now, once again, it's full of music. It's so full of music that it's almost an operetta or even an opera itself. Singing, 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 dancing, a whole lot of this, pretty much all the time, music, music, music going. So if you like Sparks, you're really going to like this movie called Annette. If you like Adam Driver, I'm not really all that convinced by him. He's a terrifically gifted person, but I find he's very overexposed. He seems to want to be in every other movie that comes out. And what's kind of interesting is that in one of his recent movies, he did a tiny little bit of singing, and he apparently didn't like it, was embarrassed about it. And now here's a movie where he sings all the time. And the fact is that Adam Driver, let's face it, handsome guy, good actor, really can't sing. So he's an odd choice for a movie which full of singing. Marianne Cotillard, on the other hand, does very nicely with everything that she's called upon to do. So the point I'm making now is that Annette is a very uneven movie. It's successful in some ways. It certainly held my attention, most of the time at least. But in other ways, it's not successful, for example, having Adam Driver do a whole lot of singing. I'm sure this will strike many people as simply charming. Me, it struck me as just kind of an eccentric decision. And in a way, a typical sort of Laos Carax decision. And again, I was just not convinced by it, even though I was interested by it. Annette was the opening night of the recently revived Cannes Film Festival, which just took place after a year off because of the pandemic. The opening night, I used to go to the Cannes Film Festival every single year. The opening night film is often not a very good one. Annette turned out to be a controversial choice. It's based by a French filmmaker. Even in France, it proved controversial. I say, if you're interested in something really offbeat and really eccentric and you really like Adam Driver, then by all means go to see Annette. Otherwise, it may not be the movie for you. Our second movie today is somewhat less eccentric, although it's about a somewhat eccentric person. It's about Val Kilmer, and the movie is entitled simply Val. And this is a documentary, a nonfiction film all about Val Kilmer, his life, his career. Now, as people who have any interest in Val Kilmer probably know already, he's been very sick for quite a few years now. He came down with cancer, with throat cancer, and it put an obvious major crimp in his acting career. And he still has to speak with an artificial device and put his finger over a tracheotomy in his throat and so forth. That said, he's very much a presence in this movie, and we hear a lot of that artificial voice, and he appears to be in good spirits most of the time, and he talks about himself and his life and his career and what it's like to have this major interruption in his career and all the problems he's faced and whatnot. And he has a pretty upbeat attitude toward it most of the time, which is a good thing. His career has been an uneven one. He has had ups and downs over the years in his career. He, for a while, was on track, I think, to become one of the major stars in Hollywood. And then he made some bad choices in his career and some interesting choices in his career. For example, he starred in a Batman movie, and he had some success with that. But he didn't want to star in another Batman movie. And one of the most interesting parts of this documentary, I think, is his comments on the Batman movie. Here it was a pretty successful film, and he was pretty successful in it in terms of critics and audiences and stuff, but he hated it because the costume and the makeup made it really almost impossible for him to do any acting. He was just stuck in this mechanical getup, not mechanical exactly, but stiff and rigid, and he couldn't be expressive, and so he just hated the experience so much that he refused to repeat it. So that's kind of interesting, and it points to one of the really interesting things about Val Kilmer, I think. From very early in life, he wanted to be an actor, and he wanted to be a real artist as an actor. He didn't want to be just a movie star. And that is kind of a theme that runs through this documentary, is the sort of contradiction between being a big, glamorous, larger-than-life hero for people and doing things like playing Batman in an outfit that makes it very difficult for you to do any real acting, and this desire to be a real artist, to express larger things through your art, to bring various things to bear through your art. He did things over the course of his major career that were really interesting. At one point, he was going to be playing a rock and roll singer in a movie, and so he spent months learning how to play the guitar. Then it turned out that because the movie was a comedy, the filmmakers didn't want him to actually be able to play. So he had to sort of pretend, even though he had spent all this time. So anyway, you learn things about the trials and tribulations of being a big star, as well as the difficulty of being a big star. And of course, Val Kilmer then ran into this extremely major roadblock some years ago by getting very, very sick, which he still is. But again, trying to maintain at least some presence in the world of the arts and the world of film. And now this documentary continues that project. The documentary documentary was made by two filmmakers named Leo Scott and Ting Poo, but it's very much really a vanity project. It's very clear that Val Kilmer's children were very involved, his grown children were very involved in the making of this movie. They appear in it, and he was obviously very involved in the making of it. So this is not any sort of an objective, let's stand back and have a really clear-eyed look at the ups and downs of Val Kilmer's life. Clearly, he is at the center of the movie, and he was clearly very much involved in the making of the movie. But I found it just really interesting to watch. I've never regarded Val Kilmer as one of the most interesting stars in the world, but he was an interesting, still remains an interesting person, an interesting Hollywood personality and non-Hollywood personality. The movie shows us things like his great project of playing. He did a one-person show where he played Mark Twain, and there's some very, very funny stuff where we see little bits of that back when he was still fairly able-bodied. And you know, little things like that make the movie really worth watching. So if you're interested in Val Kilmer, it's a must-see. If you're interested in the movies of the recent decades, it's a probably should see. And if you're just interested in a good involving documentary about Hollywood and the Hollywood scene and what it's like to try to be a real actor and not just a movie star, it's a very interesting picture. I had a good time watching it. Val, good documentary. And our final movie for today, again, nothing in comparison with the other ones. It's a very, very different kind of a film, but The Green Knight, which was written and directed by David Lowery. And one of the he's a very interesting filmmaker, by the way, and he definitely continues that here. One of the most interesting things about The Green Knight is that it's based on a book-length poem, which I have been fond of ever since my college years, all those decades ago, which was known in Middle English as Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. And this movie is that story. It's that poem, that book-length poem made into a modern-day movie, now called simply The Green Knight. And yes, it has a Green Knight in it. And the main character is Sir Gawain, played by Dev Patel, and he is a knight of King Arthur's court. And just as in the Middle English poem, the movie has to do with this amazing wager which is made. One day, striding, well, not striding exactly, but sort of striding on a horse into King Arthur's court, comes this monstrous figure, a green knight, a great, big, enormous green knight, covered with sort of tree-like bark and sort of greenish, and says, "I will challenge any one of your knights may come and strike me one blow. And all I require is that 1 year later that knight seek me out in my green chapel, and I get to return the blow." So, okay, up steps Sir Gawain and says, "I will do that." And the Green Knight bows down, and Sir Gawain takes his blow and strikes the Green Knight's head clean off. The Green Knight picks up his head and says, "See you in a year at my place," and leaves the castle. So now poor Sir Gawain has got to prepare for the whole next year, to go and find the Green Knight and now have himself struck in the same way. So after a while, he sets off on his quest to find the Green Knight's lodging, which is called the Green Chapel, and that takes him quite a while to find. And along the way, he stays with another great lord in the lord's castle and has various experiences there. And then finally he says, "Now I have to go and find the Green Knight." And the lord of the chapel of the castle says, "Oh no, he lives right nearby. Don't worry, you can go off. But in the meanwhile, let's play a little game of our own. Each day I will give you what I get when I go hunting, and each day you will give me what you received at my place the night before." Well, Sir Gawain strikes up a relationship with that lord's wife, which is kind of interesting. And finally, at the appointed time, which is Christmas time, he goes off to find the Green Knight and receive his blow. Well, it turns out that all this stuff is connected. The lord with whom he stays on his way to see the Green Knight turns out to be, I won't give it away, intimately connected with the Green Knight. And the whole thing turns out to be a sort of a test of Sir Gawain. Now, I will say that I really, really love that old English poem, or Middle English poem, I mean, which I recently reread. It's a terrific thing, and it's just full of, if you read a good translation, it's full of wonderful alliteration and rhyme and meter and all of that. So to make that into a movie is going to be a challenge, and you know, the one that is going to be difficult even for a very interesting and creative filmmaker like David Lowery. So I think the movie is partly successful. It's, by the way, gotten wonderful reviews, so a lot of people think it's way better than I do. I think it's a very good movie, but not a great movie. My main quarrel with it is that, like so many of the films that come out nowadays, it's basically a comic book movie, which is to say it's full of action, it's full of special effects, it has a certain amount of sex in it, which a lot of the comic book movies have, but mainly it has action and special effects and action, and that's just the problem. There are too many movies nowadays are like that. That said, this is definitely a cut above. It is not merely another Marvel Comics universe movie. I would say, going back to a phenomenon from my youth, it's a Classics Illustrated, like those old comics that gave us comic book versions of the great tales like Moby Dick and Macbeth and so forth. So it is a comic book movie, but at least it's a high-toned comic book movie. It's a slightly cultural comic book movie. It's a comic book movie that has roots in genuine high culture, even though itself it's very, very ordinary middlebrow culture. So I had a pretty good time watching The Green Knight. It's very, very well done for what it is. I just wish that it had more in common with true English literature and a little bit less in common with the comic book movies that are all the rage nowadays. It's a good movie, but not a great movie. And that is my very varied story this week, Joe.
Very varied indeed. Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Annette, Val, and The Green Knight.